Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of. I knew it from the start. I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart.
The sole focus of tonight's KVC Arts is on Jock Bartley, one of the founding members of Firefall. Jock Bartley remains the only original member to have stayed with the group through today. Now, with Jock Bartley and Firefall, this involves a history which is so interwoven with so many others, it's actually a bit startling to hear name after name after name. My interview with Jock will be spread out over two separate KVC Arts, and tonight alone, there will be references to and or interactions with The Byrds, Neil Young, Linda Ronstadt, Timothy B. Schmidt, Spirit, The Flying Burrito Brothers, Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris, and really many more. And now, just to get your attention and tread on familiarity for a moment, we open with and have in the background one of Firefall's classic 70s super hits, but tonight we'll be hearing about the new album called Comet.
You're right. What's so great about Firefall is the history of the band and the intertwining nature of a lot of those Southern California and Colorado 70s bands, you know, it's just amazing. You know, we had this record finished December last year, and we're going to put it out in January or February, and then, you know, the pandemic happened and the bottom fell out in the music business and putting records out suddenly just ground a halt for everybody. And Mark Andes and I really hammered our manager, who's also our record label, Sunset Boulevard Records, to put it out in the middle of the pandemic here, because there's not a lot of new music out right now. And I know that a lot of the bands and groups and artists that maybe are sitting on a new record, they're waiting until the spring or summer of 2021, and the glut of new music that I anticipate coming out in the next 3 to 5 months, you know, we would have got lost for sure at that. And I'm really glad that we put it out in the middle of the pandemic and gave a lot of listeners and our fans something new to listen to and some really positive music and some great music and great songs to listen to. So we're really excited that it's out now.
Nature's way of telling you something's wrong. It's nature's way of telling you in a song. It's nature's way of receiving you. It's nature's way of retrieving you. It's nature's way of something's wrong.
You know, I will backtrack this a little bit and say that for 10 years or more, Firefall, like a lot of the other bands that we tour with from the 70s, whether it be America or Poco or Pure Prairie League or Orleans or Ambrosia or Atlanta Rhythm Section, all of us are really good friends. You know, we've been coasting on the hit songs that we had from the 70s. And, you know, when we play on a bill that has 3 or 4 other 70s bands on it, we're only given 35 or 40 minutes to play. And I've known as band leader, I've known which 40 minutes we need to play because people are buying tickets to hear You Are the Woman and Just Remember I Love You in Strange Way and Mexico and Cinderella.
Yeah.
You know, and we were coasting for quite a while. And the way this new album pretty much started was we started doing Nature's Way, the classic Spirit song that I always thought it was from the 60s, but it actually came out in early 1970. And that was a great, great band. And it's part of our history because Mark's in the band now.
Yep.
When we started playing Nature's Way live, honoring some of our past, because Firefall has past with Spirit, but also The Byrds, Michael Clark, our original drummer, was from the Byrds, and Chris Hillman figured prominently in our early days in Firefall, and just a lot of that Southern California sound and the musicians that played there. We got such great response from playing Nature's Way live that I suggested to Mark that we actually record the song, and he said, yeah, sure, why not? So we recorded it, it sounded good, and that led us to believe that, well, maybe it's time for us to do a new record.
Mm.
And of course, on Nature's Way, Timothy B. Schmidt from the Eagles and John McPhee from the Doobie Brothers are guest appearances on that song, which is great. As a sidelight, what's really cool was when Firefall was inducted into the Colorado Music Hall of Fame in early 2015, the induction class that night was the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Poco, that had Timothy B. Schmidt playing with them, Firefall, and Stephen Stills and Manassas.
Right.
What an induction class. But when we were downstairs in the dressing rooms, Timothy B. Schmidt and Mark, who knew each other, they weren't great friends yet, they knew each other, but Timothy told Mark that when he was a senior in high school in Sacramento, California, that his favorite band was Spirit, and Mark Andes, the bass player, was his idol on bass, and he would drive anywhere in the state of California to go see Spirit play.
And,
you know, unbelievable. Here you got an Eagle, one of the best voices ever, you know, telling Mark Andes, who Mark, of course, is a real humble guy, and, you know, he kind of blushed and kind of, you know, laughed and stuff. But when Mark asked Timothy if he would honor us by singing on our version of Nature's Way, Timothy said, absolutely, no problem. And, of course, John McPhee was in Timothy's little solo band that was touring a little bit at the time. So we got an Eagle and a Doobie Brother all at once to be on Nature's Way, which is only fitting because that song was an environmental anthem of the late 60s, kind of, and was kind of the end of the hippie days, and it's just perfect. And Firefall, I really like our version of Nature's Way that Mark Andes and Timothy B. Schmidt sing.
Nature's Way, telling you something's wrong.
So where that leads is once we started recording and Nature's Way was the first song that we were going to have for our new record, I started really thinking about how great the music of the mid and late 1960s was and how all of those amazing bands and artists of the 60s really led into the 1970s and all the great music that came from the 70s. I wrote the music, and I wanted it to sound like a bird song, you know, really simple, and I was thinking 12-string guitar. Another guest appearance on that song on Way Back When is John Jorgensen, one of the best guitar players, you know, in the world right now. Anyway, you know, because I know he plays 12-string better than I do. But, when I started writing the song, and the first verse came out, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Byrds and then Bob Dylan, and I wrote the chorus, which Way Back When, we didn't know then, we'd never be again so alive, Way Back When in 1965. So I knew that the second verse was going to need to be 1967, and the third verse wanted to be 1969. skipping years. You know, it's funny. What I did was I wanted to be historically accurate with the song.
Yeah.
When I was writing the lyrics. So I Googled top 100 songs of 1967. And suddenly there was Aretha Franklin, Respect, and Rascals, Groovin', you know, and all these great bands. And I'm going, oh, wow, that's perfect. And then I did the same thing on 1969 and found, you know, Let It Be, Creedence Clearwater, and the music from Big Pink by the band, and Led Zeppelin. So I wrote all of those down that I was thinking about using and included them into my storyline of a guy and his girlfriend just having the best time of their lives in the late 60s. So that's kind of where that song came from. It was CSN and Let It Be, and Led Zeppelin turned up loud. Way back when, we didn't know then, we could never go back in time. Way back when, in 1969, you know, that music, I was in high school then. My whole world changed like a lot of people's did, you know, on February 9th, 1964, when the Beatles played on Ed Sullivan's show,
yeah.
You know. And I knew from that moment, I was already a guitar player. I had been fortunate. My mom found me a really famous jazz guitar player named Johnny Smith,
yes,
who had dropped out of the New York jazz scene and moved to Colorado with his wife. And he opened a music store, and I ended up at 9 years old being one of his first students. And I learned so much, not only from the teacher, Johnny Smith, but even just watching him play as a budding lead guitar player. I learned from him and learned from watching him that taste and being a tasteful player on your instrument is more about what you don't play,
yes,
than what you do play. And that the spaces between your musical passages oftentimes mean more or make such a statement with nothing going on. So I kind of learned about tasteful playing and being a musician who was somewhat understated early on. So that by the time I got into rock and roll bands and, you know, was playing, by the time Rick Roberts and I met,
yeah,
you know, it was perfect. And it was kind of a faded kind of deal. And just to talk a little bit more about the history.
Yes.
So, of course, Rick Roberts replaced Graham Parsons in the Flying Burrito Brothers,
right,
with Chris Hillman. And, of course, Graham had joined the Byrds and took them in the Sweetheart of the Rodeo direction, the country direction, which commercially was not a success at all at the time.
Right.
But a lot of those rock stars from Southern California, many of them moved to the mountains above Boulder, Colorado,
yes,
in the early 70s. Caribou Ranch was there where Chicago, mm-hmm, made all their records. Stephen Stills, Chris Hillman, Richie Furey, Jim Walsh, Kent Fogelberg, Carl Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Yep.
They all moved up above Boulder, Colorado, where I live.
Yeah.
And suddenly Boulder kind of became this hotbed of national music. And it was interesting because when I was on the road with Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris, I totally fell into that band in Boulder. They needed a guitar player, the guy that they had hired sight unseen, because James Burton from Elvis's band, who played on all of Graham's records, wasn't available. And Clarence White was in the Byrds, and they needed a guitar player.
Yeah.
And they hired a guy who ended up not being too good. And they played their first gig in Boulder, and the club owner in Boulder called me and said, you should get down here. You might be able to get a gig. And I went down and saw Emmylou and Graham play country music, and I sat in with them the next night and ended up getting hired, even though I wasn't a country picker, You know, I was more of a rock guy, but I was not a country guy at all. I had no experience with country music, but I was there at the right place at the right time. And what was interesting was the first gig we played was in Austin, Texas. The second gig was in Houston, Texas at Liberty Hall. And on the third night of a three-night stand in Houston, in walks Neil Young and Linda Ronstadt and comes and sits in with us.
Mm.
And what was amazing was that was the first time that Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris ever met or sang together. And after our show where they sang a few songs with us, Neil invited us all back to his hotel. He had a big old suite in some fancy Houston hotel. And Neil's band and Linda's band and Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris's band, the Fallen Angels, we all hung out, stayed up all night. And Graham must have played 50 country songs that I'd never heard of before. I'd never heard of the Louvin Brothers or any of that country stuff. But the thing that I distinctly remember was he'd be strumming a country song, and Linda and Emmylou were sitting just a little away from him, their faces together, blending their voices together in harmony for the very first time.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just such an amazing thing to be in the room in.
Wow.
Yeah, to me that was like, oh my gosh, unbelievable. But anyway, so the tour goes on. We play in New York City at Max's Kansas City, and Rick Roberts, who replaced Graham in the Flying Burrito Brothers, and actually it was Rick Roberts who went down when he was in the Burrito Brothers and pretty much discovered Emmylou Harris. And he called Chris Hillman back at the hotel and said, Chris, you got to come down here. And Chris says, I'm in bed. And Ricky says, no, you got to come down here. This girl is amazing. And Chris got dressed and went down and saw Emmylou Harris. And they basically discovered Emmylou. And Chris that night called Graham Parsons in L.A., who was no longer in the Burrito Brothers, and said, I think I found the female singer that you've been looking for. So it's amazing because, you know, here's Rick Roberts and Chris Hillman, who discovered Emmylou Harris and the Flying Burrito Brothers, and, you know, they helped to invent country rock.
Yes.
Graham Parsons and also Poco and Rusty Young, they invented country rock, a new genre, along with the Byrds having invented folk rock. So to have a lot of those guys move to the mountains above Boulder was great. But back to New York City, Rick Roberts came and saw us play.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Rick, and I was talking to Rick, and we said, wow, you live in Boulder? I live in Boulder, too. We should get together. And it took a few months, but he came and saw a rock band that I was playing locally with in Boulder and went, wow, this is the guy that wasn't the greatest country player, but look at him. Wow. And I started working with Rick on what he thought was going to be his new solo record, his third solo record, on A&M Records, and that was going until Mark Andes, who was one of the L.A. guys that moved to Colorado, started joining us, and suddenly it started feeling like a band. And Rick Roberts said to us, to Mark Andes and I know this guy Larry Burnett in Washington, D.C., who has great songs, and he and I blend great together. I should get him out here. Hey, I've got a tape of a song. You want to hear something? And Mark and I went, sure. The first song that Rick played for Mark and I was Cinderella.
Oh, wow.
And Mark and I's mouth drop open and go, get him out here. And the end of that story is that when Larry came out and the first day of practice, the band who would become Firefall, on our first day of rehearsal, we had 25 original songs to work out.
Oh, wow.
Because those guys had amazing songs. And in that first week when we were working out the songs and just loving what it was sounding like, we were learning songs like Mexico, Cinderella, Livin' Ain't Livin', that a year and a half later would be on our first album.
Yeah.
So the band never really had a problem with material. You know, when you're starting a new band and maybe you have your sights set and I want to try to get a record deal or whatever, you know, you have to write the songs and, oh, what are we going to sound like? Firefall never had that problem. We sounded like Firefall right from the get-go with Rick and Larry's songs with Mark and I playing them. About a month later, Michael Clark came and joined the band. And the synergy between Michael Clark, who in the Byrds had been called the King of 4/4, a really simple, straight-ahead, tasty drummer.
Yeah.
And then with Mark Andes from Spirit, he wasn't a regular rock or country rock kind of player. He was progressive, and Spirit was a progressive rock band.
Yes.
When you put Michael and Mark together and then me on top as a Cook and Lee guitar player, you know, it was fantastic. And then when we got our record deal, we added David Muse, who Rick Roberts knew from Florida, as our color guy on sax and flute and keyboards. And it was phenomenal. We had our sights set high from the get-go. And the reason was is because the songs were so great.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. We are streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Find many past KVC Arts programs via podcast through iTunes, Spotify, and NPR One. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. This edition of KVC Arts is focused entirely on Jock Bartley and Firefall. They had a couple mega hits in the 1970s, You Are the Woman and Just Remember I Love You. They have a new disc out now called Comet. We'll be touching on the new album and mixing in a lot of very intertwined history as well. Up in just a bit, the Bee Gees, as well as Stephen Stills just down the hall, encountering Eric Clapton. We skipped over something very well, and I also want to include, this may throw you for a loop, but in a pleasant way, so this deserves a little bit of lead up. When reading about Firefall, we've already discovered, you know, it's so much like one of those charts showing the interconnected nature of so many bands and 7 degrees of separation from this, that, or the other, and name after name has already come up and will keep coming up, whether it's the guys that would become the Eagles or Poco or Chris Hillman, that gives us a Byrds connection, and there's the John Jorgensen connection. He's connected to where I live. And on the new disc, he provided work on Way Back When. So I have to tell you, Jock, about 40 minutes ago, I messaged back and forth with John Jorgensen briefly. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, totally. I just sent him a message because I had interviewed him some years ago. And he mentioned a couple of things. Is one, to ask Jock if he remembers jamming at an early Bonnaroo.
I do. And, you know, I had never really heard of John Jorgensen until his participation in Chris Hillman's Desert Rose Band.
Right.
Once I got to know John, I mean, he is one of the most amazing musicians on the planet.
Oh, yes.
Not only he can play Django Reinhardt 30s jazz music and swing and bluegrass and everything, but he plays mandolin, fiddle, saxophone, oboe, all these instruments. He is a one of a kind, and it's just an honor to have him on our record along with Timothy B. Schmidt and John McPhee and a few other people. It's like, yeah, the connections between bands that came from California, a lot of those guys in the early 70s moved to Boulder, Colorado. You know, Caribou was there. Red Rocks, one of the best outdoor venues in the country, was just down the road. And on any given night, you know, when Firefall was just starting to play, nobody really knew who we were, although on the poster would say, Michael Clark from the Byrds, Mark Andes from Spirit, Jock Bartley from Gram Parsons, Rick Roberts from the Flying Burrito Brothers. You know, we already had a name, and because of that, we were getting paid more for gigs than the local guys were. But on any given night in Boulder, on our first few months of playing live around, you know, Joe Walsh or Stephen Stills or Dan Vogelberg would come in and want to sit in, and we were kind of, you know, set apart. And it's just, for me, as a really good lead guitar player, but you and I both know that there are hundreds of thousands of great guitar players out in the world.
Sure.
You know, I was lucky enough to meet in with Rick Roberts and fall in with Graham and Emmy Lou, and a lot of Firefall really felt fated. You know, like it was really destiny for it to happen. And I'm really proud to say that Firefall is, of our genealogy tree that starts with the Byrds and the Buffalo Springfield, and then in the branches there's Poco and Gram Parsons and the Eagles and Loggins and Messina and all these other great bands. Firefall is legitimately at the top of that tree, and we're one of the last bands that are in that tree. You know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, they're in a different tree.
Right.
You know,
right.
They borrowed from the Byrds and sounded like 12-string a lot, but they weren't of the same kind of folk rock, country rock groove that all those bands I was talking about were part of. And I just know how lucky I am and fortunate and blessed to still be doing that. And thanks to Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett for all those songs that they wrote that we played. And the synergy that we played was really part of what the band was. But to me, it's the songs first. And, you know, because there's a lot of great bands that don't have great songs and then nothing ever happens with them. So
truly,
we were fortunate on a lot of levels.
I would say, yes. Oh, and just to play the Six Degrees of Separation thing, as far as with Tom Petty, if I'm not mistaken, some of his earliest works still in Florida would have been with Don Felder. So there's the Eagles connection to Timothy B. and now you. But hey, that
was
just now,
what's interesting was Don Felder was Tom Petty's guitar teacher.
Yes.
When
yes.
Tom Petty was like 12 or 13 years
yes.
old, and Felder was like 15 or 16 or something. And yeah, that whole Florida connection that had Bernie Ledden and
yes. oh, yeah, there's the
you
Eagles
know, Don
thing again.
Felder and Stephen Stills, they went to L.A. and got in the Eagles.
Yeah.
Or when you think about Stephen Stills and Richie Furey in the Go-Go Singers in New York City,
right.
they decided to go out to L.A. and met up with Neil Young and suddenly to Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah, there's that.
It's amazing how a lot of that happened and how many musicians were intertwined
yes.
and were friends, or this guy would play on this band's record, or John Jorgensen would do this, or Timothy B. Schmidt would do this, and I can't tell you how lucky I feel and humble I am to be a small part of that.
It's funny, we're talking about Firefall and the new album, Comet, but we have yet to really mention it other than a couple of the songs. But I have to say,
right.
at one point, we have to address something, please. And that is, you weren't just a good guitarist in Boulder. You were already known for Zephyr. And then, for that matter, you were brought into Zephyr to replace Tommy Bolin because you were a known
right.
guitarist. So it was only a few days ago, by the way, that I learned that you had jazz in your roots. And I actually know of Johnny Smith's name because of folks like Gene Krupa and Benny Goodman and folks like that. I'm a jazz geek as well. So,
right.
so there's that. So you growing up, it sounds like you were already there as a kid. You didn't move there to be an art major. You went to the school that you were living at.
Yeah. And, you know, what was interesting is, when the Beatles happened in 64, mm-hmm. and all my friends in high school, I think I was like a freshman in high school then.
Oh, perfect.
I already had played guitar 5 years,
okay.
you know,
okay.
and everybody in high school was thinking, God, wouldn't it be great to be in a band? And mm-hmm. I was already pretty classically trained, and I'd been being pumped all this Duke Ellington and Bach and all this great jazz stuff. But after the Beatles happened and then the Stones followed and the whole British invasion, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I want to do that. And what's interesting, here's a story for you.
Please.
A few years later, I was in rock bands in high school and stuff. A few years later, I stumbled upon the Fresh Cream album that Eric Clapton played so amazingly on.
Yeah.
And I then, of course, discovered the John Mayall and the Blues Breakers album with Clapton. But that first solo on I Feel Free of Cream,
yes, yes.
when that solo came on, literally the heavens opened up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly that was possible. I'm going, oh, my God, changed my life. It was like, oh, my God, because Clapton, you know, and Hendrix and a lot of those great players, they weren't really thinking. Music for them was not a thinking kind of thing. It was a total gut and heart and feel thing.
Yes.
And Eric Clapton became my hero, like so many millions of other young guitar players in those days. Fast forward to when Firefall got our record deal. We're going down to Miami at Criterion Studios, you know, and we're there making our first album. Nobody's heard of our band Firefall, but people knew Michael Clark or Mark Andes or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, the Bee Gees were down the hall recording.
Oh, cool. Stephen
Stills was in another studio. And when it came time for me to do my soloing on the songs, I started out with Mexico, which I knew was going to be maybe my high point as a lead guitar player on that record.
Okay.
And we'd been playing Mexico for about a year and a half, so I kind of knew what I was going to play, and I was ready. And what was interesting was, the day before I started soloing, we had that mariachi horn section come in and play the da-da-da-da-da in the middle of my solo. So I knew that I had something new to contend with in the solo, but, you know, I was going to start off with Mexico. And I'm in warming up, getting my fingers going, and the amp sounded good, and my Les Paul singing. And people are in and out of the control room. Jim Mason, the producer, pushes the button and says, "You ready to go?" And I went, "Yeah, let's go." So he starts playing Mexico. I'm listening in headphones. And, you know, one of the things that I do really well and learned kind of from Johnny Smith was answering back vocal passages with a guitar line.
Sure, call
and response. And playing something similar or same thing. But I play off vocals a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing, and it's going good. First verse, yeah, I'm going. Second verse, sounding great. Here comes my solo. And I'm playing my solo, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know where the horns come in. You know, and I have to play with the horns. So I'm playing my solo, and there they are, they play, and I stop. Then they play, and I play, and then I play, and then they play. And then I finish the song off, and it ended up being a one-take performance on the song. And Jim goes, "God, that was great. Come on in." And I went, "You know, it did feel really good, but I had no idea what I was going to play when the horns played. So keep what I did and give me just the solo section and let me see if I can beat that." And Jim Mason went, "No, come on in." "Jim, really, I think I can play that better. Keep what I did and let me see if I can just beat the section with the horns, okay?" And he said, "No, come in." And I went, "No." So I take my guitar off. I'm a little pissed off. I'm going, "Man, I've been working for this song Mexico for a year and a half, and now I can't even have a second take at it, you know?" So I storm in the control room, and I go in, and the first person I see is my hero, Eric Clapton, who's been watching me play great for that one take performance.
Wow.
And I just crumbled. I just turned into Jackie Gleason, you know? And he stood up and said, "Keen playing, man," and walked out. And I'm kind of laying on the floor instead of going, "Oh, my God." So Eric Clapton, you know, and Jim Mason said, "Now, what do you want to do over again?" And I said, "Nothing. I can't play anymore. I just met Eric Clapton." And the thing is, of course, had I known he was in the control room watching me play,
no,
I wouldn't have been able to play anything probably.
No. Of course not. Oh, my God. Wow. That is, you know, I was hoping for a couple of behind-the-scenes, can't-read-it-elsewhere kind of things here and there, and this is just ripe already. This is phenomenal. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Jock Bartley with Firefall. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's go back now to my recent conversation with Jock Bartley. Just ahead, a bit about Zephyr, one of the Boulder area bands Bartley was in before ending up in Firefall. Also, more on Firefall's new disc, Comet. You know, you were talking about your approach to playing guitar, that is, and there is a jazz thing that you can find in it sometimes. I would swear that, going back to Zephyr for a second, folks can track down live recordings of Zephyr, and some with you and some with Tommy Bolin, and some of Tommy's work as well as yours.
during the guitar solo time for whatever song here or there, I would swear it's like a Herb Ellis approach almost sometimes. There is this jazz run along the fretboard. Was this a sound of Tommy that you intentionally continued, or was it more of a case of this is what you did, so it was a natural fit for Zephyr?
That's a really good question. Now, what's interesting is that Tommy was a powerhouse lead guitar player.
Yeah.
And when he joined into Zephyr, which actually a couple of friends of mine and I went down and heard the new kid in town, Tommy Bolin in Boulder, sitting in with a band called Ethereal Zephyr at that time. And I saw his first gig with Candy and David, and it was amazing. And as Zephyr progressed in the first couple of years, and I think two albums that they had out with Tommy, it was almost like Tommy Bolin and Candy Gibbons were competing for the spotlight. Mm. It's like, oh yeah, take this, and oh yeah, you know. And it's like, that was one of the things that was so exciting about them, is that they had two front people that were just balls to the wall, you know, playing and singing, and Candy was great. When Tommy quit the band, he joined a local band called Energy, and then got hired into James Gang, replacing Joe Walsh, and then later Deep Purple. Candy and David hired two or three guys out of my band, The Children, and I became the lead guitar player. And for the first time, we really had different, more melodic kind of music. The original Zephyr was just balls to the wall, you know, rock and roll. And we kind of were a little bit more melodic. And I just kind of played what I played when it came time for me to solo. I'm sure there's not too many recordings of the live Zephyr with me in the band, because we only played about 5 or 6, 8 gigs or something before we made that album, Sunset Ride. But no, I didn't try to emulate or be like Tommy. I was me.
Yeah.
But
okay,
what
good.
Was interesting is he was always out in the spotlight at the edge of the stage playing to the fans. And at that point in my career, I was standing back by my amp doing nothing, just trying to sound good. And I remember Candy turning around like, where's my guitar player? Come kick me in the ass.
Part
and I was
act.
Like, I was trying to play Tasty standing next to my amp, you know?
Okay.
For me, that was my first national exposure and making a record with Zephyr playing rock and roll, Boulder style. And then out of the blue, I get hired into Gram Parsons and Emmy Lou Harris and did my best to play country music, but I was no country guy. You know, but I really feel that I was fated to have met Rick Roberts there. And, you know, with Rick and Chris having discovered Emmy Lou Harris and the whole Birds thing, and then Chris suggested to Rick Roberts when our local drummer for the first month didn't really work out, it was Chris who suggested, you know, Michael Clark's not doing anything. He's driving his VW bus around the Great Northwest. You should call him. And then when Michael got down there, I'll tell you what, as soon as Michael and Mark and I started playing together, we sounded just like what people knew later as the Firefall Colorado sound. And I'm just really blessed. And yeah, I'm a really good guitar player, and I deserve to be in this band and have the success that we've had and stuff. But at the same time, you know, it was just being at the right place at the right time a couple of times. I grew up in the Colorado Springs area and then went to college in 1968 up in Boulder. And within a year or two, that's when all the Stephen Stillses, the Chris Hillmans, and Richie Furies, everybody was moving in town. And I mean, Caribou, I mean,
yeah.
John Lennon and Michael Jackson and, you know, amazing amount of people that were just up the hill in Netherlands at Caribou Ranch. It was a phenomenal time. And I'm really glad that my guitar playing skills were up to the challenge because, you know, I've told Rick Roberts this before. I was born to play on Your Song Mexico and a couple of your songs. I mean, my guitar playing was the perfect match for his songs, you know. And, you know, here Linda Ronstadt recorded Colorado by Rick Roberts.
Yes.
And here Rick Roberts and Chris Hillman discovered Emmy Lou Harris at a little club in D.C., and turned Grammar to Emmy Lou, and then boom. I mean, to be part of that really magical musical thing, it's humbling. And, you know, I just know how lucky I am to still be doing it. our new record, which I'm basically the producer on, I knew going in that at least half of the record, if not more, really had to sound like Firefall. You know, it had to be an updated version, but it had to compete with and stand up against our first three albums of 76, 77, and 78. And the songs were the key, the singing, the playing. Also, in my production hat on, I knew that I needed to keep the production really pretty sparse and not fill up everything.
Right.
So many producers do nowadays, and hey, let's add more strings or more percussion or hey, you know, more vocals or whatever, and it's this big lush production. You know, you listen to a song on our new Comet record like Younger, which written by Gary Burr in Nashville. I mean, unbelievable, you know, and I knew that I had to be real careful with the treatment of that song because I know a lot of our fans and radio people who still play our records really like kind of the sparse, somewhat hands-off production of Firefall records. Myself, you know, we need a new song like Rick's Mexico.
Like Mexico.
I want to burn like I did on Mexico. We need a new Mexico. Firefall needs a new Mexico, and then suddenly the light bulb went on and it went, a new Mexico. So I basically, with great honor and respect for Rick Roberts and his song Mexico, which I played one of my better solos on, I wanted to write another one. And so we ended this record with a song called A New Mexico, where I get to kind of do what I do, which is play lead guitar on a song kind of a little Latin.
I really loved it when I ran across just the title, and then it ended up being this follow-up, if you will, for the song from the debut album. But it really made me choke on my coffee when I put it together, why it was called A New Mexico. It was just, we needed one of those, A New Mexico. Oh, my God.
Right.
It's a cool story, too, by the way. It's, in a way, comparable to Cinderella slightly in that it's a person talking about something that happened and then a year or a few years later revisiting what happened.
Right.
And speaking about A New Mexico here. Now, is this a true story, by chance? A New Mexico? The people meeting? And no?
No. I thought, okay, so the song was going to either be New Mexico, maybe Santa Fe or Taos or someplace.
Right.
Because New Mexico's an amazing state with just amazing scenery. Or A New Mexico. And then I started thinking about, yeah, so there's this guy who goes on vacation to Mexico. He's all alone. He's bummed out. He hates life. Mexico's not a really cool place. And then he goes back with a girl the next year, and suddenly everything's changed.
Yeah.
Just because he's in love now and he's with somebody, and, you know, it's A New Mexico. And that's kind of how the lyrics came together on that.
Nice.
And then by the time I got to the third verse, I figured, well, why don't you have them get a place in New Mexico and they can be outside of Santa Fe and loving their life, living together, you know.
What a difference a year can make in who I am and where I go. North
songs are great because in a three-verse song, just like in Way Back When,
yes,
you get basically three verses to tell a story.
Yes.
And unlike poetry or short stories or whatever, and you know, a lot of times a verse has either four or eight lines in it, but four lines, you have to be pretty concise and not be overly wordy and just tell the story you want to tell. And of course, the chorus has kind of put the exclamation point on what the song's about. But yeah, I just wanted another song to really sound like Firefall. And frankly, that whole idea led me to wanting to name the album Comet.
Because
our first album cover, I'm a painter. Ah. I've been a painter longer than I've been a guitar player, than a drawer and an artist guy.
Yeah.
I helped design the first album cover with that beautiful,
right,
the comet reflecting in the lake.
Yes.
I even wanted to paint it, and they were smart enough at Atlantic Records to say, great idea, thanks, kid, we'll take it from here.
Oh,
you know, and then they came up with that album cover. But when the album cover for Comet, we found that amazing photo of the comet Neowise in 2019, and my manager said, that's it. You know, let's call it Comet. And I said, that sounds great. So to me, that's just an extension of wanting to sound like and be like who we are, which is Firefall,
yeah,
even though we haven't put out an album for 20 years.
It's been conversation with Jock Bartley of Firefall for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. And with such an extensive intertwining history as well as the new album to talk about, we only covered a portion of it tonight. And we will revisit this once again next week. More on Jock Bartley and Firefall at fire-fall.squarespace.com. Also firefallofficial.com. And Jock has a Facebook presence as well. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Jock Bartley as well as to Ann Layton of Layton Media for getting me in touch with Jock. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wadd. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.